So we're moving forward to closings, and I think we're with you, Dr. Redding.
Thank you. I believe you have my closing about to be handed to you.
Just about to come. Okay, we're in your hands.
Thank you. So I'm appearing today to provide the closing representation for Wise Response. In this closing, I will address the following further issues that have arisen since Wise Response was heard: stranded assets, joint witness statements, and the recently notified Otago Regional Council Regional Policy Statement. So just to remind the court, Wise Response called two expert witnesses, Dr. Jim Salinger, an expert in climate change, and Mr. Dougal McTavish, an expert in hydrogeology. Dr. Salinger presented evidence on the modelled futures for precipitation in Otago and concluded that while some areas would get wetter, others would be drier, and Mr. Salinger's evidence has not been contested, as far as I'm aware. Wise Response takes from this a need to recognise increased risks to the water flows in the region and a need to be precautionary in the allocation of our water bodies. Mr. McTavish presented evidence on the ability to make environmental water flows now and the potential for new approaches to water allocation and land management to achieve such flows. His evidence on environmental flows has also not been contested, as far as I'm aware. I'll refer to each of these experts as relevant as I go through the rest of this closing. Mr. McTavish also participated in the joint witness statements sessions. His participation in signing of the JWS agreements does not indicate support for the approaches discussed at those JWS as being more desirable than the relief sought by Wise Response, but as facilitating addressing the technical matters of gathering and use of hydrological data. So a reminder of the relief sought. The basic relief sought by WR was and is first that before any new consents are granted, an environmental flow regime be established for each river. This should be based on the best available hydrological and ecological information or modelling, which would be reviewed once the other statements and plans are operative. Second, that allocation should not be based simply on past use, but on demonstrating that the land use system is genuinely sustainable, including under the sinking lid net zero carbon emissions policy for 2050. The relief sought by WR was not considered at the JWS meetings, as it was considered outside the scope of the court directions to the JWS sessions. So, moving on to stranded assets. Wise Response shares the concerns expressed by the planners in the JWS statement of the 4th and 21st of June regarding the basis for assessing what is a stranded asset. Basically, we just don't think that the information is there. And it could be quite a variable concept. The concept of asset, however, is somewhat misleading. All other things being equal, an asset whose ongoing financial value is dependent on a privilege that has a clear and end date depreciates in value relative to the returns achievable before expiry of the privilege. So essentially, the asset decreases in value as the date on which the privilege draws closer to its expiry. At the point of expiry of the privilege, the asset has only its current value without the privilege. Thus, any asset such as irrigation equipment, once the privilege of being able to take water no longer exists, has only its sale, heritage, or other similar values. The purchase of equipment does not entitle an owner to an expectation of obtaining a privilege. The same applies to investment in viticulture and orchards. To the extent they are dependent on a privilege, such as a resource consent to take water that has a clear expiry date, the value of the orchard is what it is worth without the resource consent. That is the structure of the legislation, and that appears to be deliberate. Wise Response does not consider there is a basis, basis in either evidence or theory for considering any allowance for supposed stranded assets. In summary, Wise Response does not accept that there can be a legitimate expectation that deemed water permits or any other expiring water permits would be replaced without considering the health or the water bodies and the implementation of the priority structure set out in the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management. Moving on to the Regional Policy Statement of the Otago Regional Council 2021. The RPS was publicly notified just this week, I think, or last week. The RPS has relevance to these proceedings and to Wise Response submission. In the interest of time, I've focused quite narrowly to those most directly relevant to Wise Response. Do you want me to read them out, the ones that are on the next page? I'm aware there might be people watching. But
yeah, we'll read them as we go, though. So we'll just take a pause and read through them and then move on to your next paragraph. But anyway, you're at paragraph number 19.
Okay. So the relevant integrated management policies essentially reiterate the decision priorities of the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management.
Okay. Now so we'll read IMP2 decision priorities for ourselves, to ourselves. Okay. Do you want us just to simply read to the end of the page, up until paragraph 21? Is that okay?
Could do. Just note there that we see the implementation of those priorities through this plan change as both practical and therefore required by the National Policy Statement and the RPSs and all those ones. So, yes, if you read through that to paragraph 21, then I can pick up again. So, paragraph 21. In summary, these provisions call for action now in light of the information available, the evidence of future climate change risks presented by Dr. Salinger, and the ability to implement environmental flows presented by Mr. McTavish. As argued in our submission, the so-called replacement permits are in fact new permits for a new activity. Therefore, draw attention in particular to Integrated Management Policy 10.2, which says, and I'll just go back over the page, prioritise avoiding the establishment of new activities in areas subject to risk from the effects of climate change.
Just pause there a second. Yep, 23.
So this is further support in the RPS freshwater policies, and I'll just read this one thing, it's just a short one. IFFWP7, freshwater, environmental outcomes, attribute states, including target attribute states and limits, ensure that, I'll jump to 5, existing over-allocation is phased out and future over-allocation is avoided. And 5, freshwater is allocated within environmental limits and used efficiently.
Just pause for a second.
Okay, paragraph 24. The court has heard the evidence of Dougal McTavish, an expert in hydrogeology, that environmental flows could be established for the catchments now. In the large amount of evidence before the court, I'm not aware of any expert evidence being presented to contest that of Mr. McTavish. Given the uncontested nature of Mr. McTavish's evidence, Wise Response considers that it is practicable now to implement in part the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management and the regional policies identified above. This would be done by requiring that no new water take permits be issued, including so-called replacement permits, without first establishing the environmental flow for the river from which it is taken. This would represent part of a phased approach to improving water management, with subsequent plans supporting that. Regarding priorities, we had just one comment here. There's one priority, the health of the water bodies. All issues of priority between other users need to be seen within that context.
Are you are you referring to deemed permits and the rights of priorities?
Yes, that was.
And so are we? Are you risking there confounding two quite separate issues, both the statutory creature which deemed permits are, together with their rights, and with the priorities established by the NPSFN?
We basically want to make the point that the health and safety of the water system needs to be the driving force in the deciding of those priorities. And as we said, those priorities we consider end. If there's going to be provision made for somehow including those priorities in future
Which priorities are we talking about, the deemed permits or the NPSFN?
The deemed permit priorities, if those were to be included in the future provisions.
You mean the plan to come?
Yes, there's a proposal here for a new policy.
So you mean the Plan Change 7?
Yeah.
Is the case with the Department of Conservation is that if you don't include the effect of those priorities, and this is what the court's proposed policy and other provisions, and they've been wording for that has been worked up further by Mr. Page, but if you don't include something like that, in these priorities, you may change the existing flow regime, which then may undermine further or may threaten further galaxid populations which are already threatened or at risk.
So
then there's an incidental but important environmental benefit.
What we're trying to say is we actually support that position.
Oh, really?
That's what we mean by that. Is that there's,
you need to say.
I'm sure they actually said that.
I love plain speaking. So you support the priorities. That's great. Yeah.
Because if they are done in a way that reflects that particular outcome.
All right. Yeah. Cool.
JWS of the 4th and 21st of June, want to say here that we fundamentally disagree with the drafts provided, as they do not prioritise the setting of the environmental flows And that's been our concern all along with the joint witness discussions. And there's been no agreements in those meetings regarding the wife's response wording. So we have a fundamental disagreement. We thought, just to make it clear for the court, that if and only if the court does not grant the relief that we have sought, then we do have a preference for version B of the...
Okay, I was just trying to look it up. What, so that's the ninth JWS.
Yes, I'm...
Yeah, I was looking it up from our database. That was a JWS dealing with the objectives, stranded assets, and some odds and sods.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
I understand what you're saying in relation to environmental flows, but what was your submission on duration?
Sorry, the duration of?
Water permits.
Our view on that is that we didn't have a submission on the duration of the water permits per se, as we felt that they, if you set the environmental flows first, then the water permits will be fitting within that context. So our view was that they're not being set until you have the flow set.
Do you understand that council proposes to do this through the land and water plan to come? Because it's not ready now to do this, ahead of workshopping and consultation with the community, whereas Mr. Page's client and many other farmers would say, set them now. The downside to that is that broader considerations, which are of importance to the MFSCM, may not be at the fore of informing those water flows. So there's two different approaches here.
Yeah. So we think the environmental flows can be set on model data now.
Well, you might be right, but the be end and all is not... no, put this a different way. Even if you are right... No, anyway, I'll leave it there. I understand what your submission is. Yeah. Thank you. Have you got any questions?
No.
Any questions?
Just to confirm, my wife's response, you didn't participate in that conferencing on the 4th and 21st of June.
No, we don't have an expert planner, and that was for expert planners.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, so I think we might be with you, Mr. Anderson. I've managed to leave my hearing schedule in another room.
That does seem about right.
Does that seem about right? Anyway.
I'm sure someone else will jump up if I've got it wrong. Thank you.
Yes, with you. You're opening and closing.
Opening and closing all at once.
Yep. One seems sicker than the other. Yeah.
They should be right. They should be all the same. They came
Commissioner Bunting seemed a bit light.
Have you got all the pages there?
Five pages. How many pages you got? One, two, three, four, five. Yeah, okay. Alrighty.
Right. So haven't had a great deal of involvement in the hearing, but have been watching and reading all the all the documents that have been coming through with interest.
No, you are light?
No, I've got the wise response.
Oh, you're the wise response one. Okay, sorry, that won't help.
Need...
Yep. There you go.
Excellent. So I'll just start at paragraph 1. Mm-hmm. Forestry Bird accepts the underlying assumption in PC7, that is, the status quo can be maintained for a short period so that OIC and the community can focus on the development of a new land and water regional plan that will give effect to the MPSFM 2020.
They need to slow it down a bit. Sorry, slow down.
I'll slow down now.
Yes.
Forestry Bird agrees with the version of PC7 that was attached to Mr. De Pelsmaker's reply evidence. The exception to this is Objective 10A.1.3, which provides for exceptions to the hold-the-line approach in PC7. As detailed below, Forest and Bird seeks an amendment to this objective so that it more closely reflects the exceptions provided in the policies. I've set out the key issues for Forest and Bird in paragraph 3, which are the need for PC7, Objective 10A.1.3, the exception sought for renewable energy generation, the exception sought for community water supplies, priority and provision for an increase in irrigated area. In relation to the need for PC7, Forest and Bird strongly disagrees with the suggestion that PC7 is somehow not required. Forest and Bed rejects the suggestion that it is somehow appropriate to rely on the existing operative plan and use the NPSCFM as the decision as the basis for decision making. Forest and Bed agrees with the Council's submissions on this issue. In addition to the reasons set out by the Council, the Court is required to have regard to the Minister's reasons for making the direction to refer the matter. In my submission, there are two matters in which the Minister's direction which strongly support PC7 being made operative in some form. One of the considerations of the Minister was failure to implement the plan change has the potential to result in significant and irreversible change to the environment. And second, the key reasons for making the direct referral are calling the plan change as part of a proposal of national significance would assist the ORC by allowing its staff to focus on developing a new land and water regional plan and avoid potential delays associated with the Schedule 1 process of the RMA that could complicate the development of the new land and water plan. In my submission, it will be contrary to these directions for the Court to decide that PC7 should not be approved in some form. It is not disputed that the regional plan for water is out of date. However, ORAG's position seems to be that PC7 should be declined because it does not immediately give effect to the NPSCFM and notably the obligation to give primacy to Te Mana Otiwai. The response to the submission is in clause 4.1 of the NPSCFM, which provides every local authority must give effect to this national policy statement as soon as reasonably practicable. PC7 does not need to fully implement the NPSCFM as long as it is part of council program or fulfilling its obligation as soon as it's reasonably practicable. It is part of the Council's program. The Minister of Conservation and North Regional Council supports this. That case related to a plan change that had to be notified under the NPSCFM 2014 but failed to be decided under the NPSCFM 2020. The Court traversed the relevant provisions of the NPSCFM 2020, including clause 1.34 and clause 1.35, which include the obligations under Te Mana Otiwai, Policy 1, Policy 6, Policy 7, Policy 8 and Policy 9, and conclude that the obligation is a future obligation. I don't need to read that out, but I think the second line there where it says that the obligation is imposed upon the Regional Council must accordingly be a future obligation rather than a current obligation. That's the key point, I think, that there's no requirement to give effect to the NPSFM immediately, but you've just got to do it as soon as reasonably practicable. PC7 is part of the Council fulfilling its obligations to give effect to the NPSCFM 2020. It is transitional, but this is to be expected and anticipated by Clause 4.1.1. The PC7 approach of rolling over existing consents while a NPSCFM compliant planning framework is put in place is a better approach to fulfilling the future obligation to give effect to the NPSCFM than the consent by consent approach relying on existing plan provisions advocated by ORA. Moving on to Objective 10.A.1.3. Objective 10.A.1.3 was considered by the planners in conferencing at JWS 9. Agreement was not reached with two versions, A and B, considered. I put them in footnotes because they are quite similar, but there's some differences in them. Forest and Bed does not support either of these options. The reason for Forest and Bed's concern is the broadly worded nature of both version A and B, specifically the reference to low environmental effects and not comprising the integrity of the new regional planning framework. This broad wording is not consistent with the way in which PC7 is developed, which is provision for a small number of limited exceptions to the underlying premise that takes should increase while the planning framework
just
is put in place.
You can just slow down a little bit. And I want to reread that paragraph.
What I'm trying to say in that paragraph is that the way in which this thing has worked out is that we've had some suggestions of limited exceptions for things like renewable energy and community water supplies and viticulture and irrigation for viticulture and orchards. So rather than having a broad exception in the policy for low environmental effects and compromising integrity, what I suggest, and I've done that in paragraph 17, is that the policy should actually say what the way in which it's developed, which is, and I've got that in paragraph 17 in underline, which refers to the limit. On page 5, at the bottom of paragraph 17, I've proposed an amended objective.
All right, I just want to read that to myself before you say
sure.
Anything more.
Okay.
Just pause.
Certainly.
and this is an objective or a policy?
So that's an objective. So in the footnotes below on page 5, I've set out the two versions that were put up at joint witness conferencing. Mm. And the main difference between them is one refers to the adverse additional. So in footnote 7, under 10.1.2b, it refers to where the risk of additional adverse environmental results from any proposed increase in the scale or duration of the take to freshwater is low. And the other version, which is version B, refers to, so if you go under footnote 8, 10.A.1.3 is the word, if this does not compromise the implementation of an integrated regional planning framework that prioritises the health and well-being of water bodies and freshwater ecosystems. So the suggestion that is included in these submissions is that we incorporate both those bits in it, but rather than have the risk of doing that is that everyone will think that they are having low effects or they're not going to compromise integrity. So the suggestion is to actually set out the exemptions that are being provided in policy in the objective.
I just pause for a second. With that in mind, I'll reread it.
So moving on to renewable energy. Trustpower is still an exemption from PC7 for renewable energy. Forestonbed is highly supportive of renewable energy as a method of combating climate change. However, Forestonbed does have concerns that the ecological integrity of water bodies can potentially be compromised if too much water is taken for any use, including renewable energy. In this case, Forestonbed does not oppose the exclusion sought by Trustpower. This is because in the context of PC, the issue is relatively modest. The schemes that fall for consenting under PC7 do not raise any significant concerns. However, Forestonbed does not accept the reasoning proposed by Trustpower. In particular, it has not accepted that the MPSREG applies to the allocation of water. The use of water for renewable energy is a second-order priority under Clause 1.35b as relating to the health needs of people. Now, that's 1.35b of the MPSFM 2020.
Just pause for a second. So effectively, in subparagraph A of 21, you're saying it is not accepted the MPS applies to the allocation of water. What you're saying is the MPS reg does not apply to the allocation of water.
That's correct. That's correct.
Right, just let me...
Yeah, I've got double negative in there.
Yeah. Too early in the morning. Double negatives.
I got up earlier than. Well, I'm not sure right. I did, but I got up pretty early this morning, only to be delayed at Christchurch Airport.
Yeah. All right, hold on.
So 22.
Okay.
Yeah, shall I count?
Yeah, and you don't accept that use of water for renewables is a second-tier priority.
So the preamble to the MPSREG makes it clear that it does not apply to decisions about the allocation and prioritisation of fresh water, and I've set out the specific reference in the preamble to it. Trustpower has referred to the decision in Carterholt-Harvey against the Waikato Regional Council, which indicated that the preamble was not intended to guide decision makers, and I don't need to read that out, but I think this was referred to both by Trustpower and the Council in their submission. So it's the middle of the first paragraph, which says, we agree with Mr. Cowper that the location of the above statement in the preamble illustrates that it's not intended to act as a guide to decision makers. In my submission, the Court's conclusion at 58 is difficult to reconcile with Section 5 of the Interpretation Act 1999, which provides. Don't need to read that out, but the you know, text in light of purpose. And three refers to the preamble being, well, it says, subsection two refers to the matters that are considered when ascertaining the meaning, and that includes the preamble. So my submission is that the MPSREG, that exclusion in the preamble, is operative and it excludes it from the decision.
So what does Carter Holt say? That's different.
Carter Holt says differently.
Okay, what does Carter Holt say then?
So if we go to the middle of 58, which I've set out.
Mm-hmm.
However, we
agree with Mr. Cowper.
Yeah. Yep. So if you start with that, it's submitted by some parties that the inclusion of the statement in the preamble precludes us from having regard to it when considering any of the contested issues to which it is relevant. And then the court goes on to accept Mr. Cowper's argument. I'll put 59 in there as well because I think that's pertinent to the current case, which is that the...
I do want to read 58 okay. and 59 because right. It's not in the front of my mind this morning, so no. Hold on a sec.
So effectively, what I'm saying is there that I don't agree with Carter Holt Harvey that the preamble, my submission to the preamble says what it says it does, and that's operative, i.e. the MPSREG doesn't apply to matters about the allocation of fresh water. But in 25, whether the MPSREG applies does not need a decision in this case. This is because 59 of Carter Holt can be applied, and that's why I put 59 in there. That is, while the NPSRG does not apply, there are relevant provisions in the RPS which can be relied on to provide the exemption sought. Mm. In this regard, Forrest and Bird agrees with Trustpower submissions and considers that the limited exemption sought by Trustpower can be justified in terms of policies 4.4.1 and 4.2.2 of the RPS.
So in terms of any decision which must be made by the court, does the court need to get into any decision as to the... meaning of the NPSREG and ascertaining its meaning from the preamble, or indeed even whether or not the NPSREG does or does not apply to the allocation of water, and thirdly, whether or not renewable energy is a second order priority. Under the NPSFM. We don't need to go
make those important decisions.
You just need to, if we're happy with Trustpower.
That's correct. The purpose of making the submission is I didn't want the court to make that decision when it didn't need to.
When
we might be confronted with having to make the argument elsewhere and dealing with.
Wow. Okay. You want to kick that can down the road?
Well, I'm happy for you to make the decision if you want.
Oh, no, I'm not happy to write decisions that I don't need to write. And I've already said that.
I mean, all I'm doing is responding to the Trustpower made submissions on this point, which I disagree with. And so I'd rather you not make a decision on that than make a decision the other way.
In fact, there's about five or six points of law which Trustpower made a submission on. And unless Mr. Moore wants to reply to all of them, need not apply to order them, all of them if there is an appropriate accommodation for Trustpower, not because of convenience, but because it's actually made out its case.
did Mr. Moore make a similar submission, I assume?
I don't know if Mr. Moore made any of those submissions. He's yet to respond, and so it's like he's probably thinking homework over the weekend. If it's not a matter that we need to decide, and these are critical issues, I would have thought, but if we don't need to decide them because there is an appropriate recognition, when I say appropriate, having a look at the higher order documents, appropriate recognition for the Trustpower hydro, then we just need to crack on with the Trustpower hydro and avoid making important decisions which will be of moment elsewhere.
Correct. Mm. That's my submission.
Okay, good. I love it when we don't have to decide things.
Mm. Good. Mm-hmm. I can leave you to read the question of renewable energy as a second order priority because the same applies in relation to that.
Yeah. Well, we know you better read it out because Mr. Moore might not like what Trust Power is proposing, a carve out for Trust Power. So you better read it out
because it is
signalled as an important issue for Trust Power.
Yeah. Forest Mid does not accept that renewable energy is a second order priority under clause 1.35B of the MPSFM. This clause refers to the health needs of people, such as drinking water. This is aimed at ensuring that safe drinking and swimming water. While climate change poses significant risks, it is stretching the words beyond their normal meaning to interpret this as a health risk. The usual interpretation of a health risk is as referred to in clause 13B, that safe drinking water is a health need. A health need of people would also be ensuring water is safe for swimming. There is a suggestion that the use of water for renewable energy is a second order priority in the Section 32 report to the MPSFM. In my submission, the reference to this does not overcome the problem that considering climate change as a health risk is not a reasonable interpretation. If the intention was that for the use of water for renewable energy was a second order priority, the MPSFM would have clearly said so, unambiguously in clause 1.352. Again, this issue does not need a decision. In this case, whether renewable energy is a second or third order priority does not change the fact that it is subservient to the first order priority of health and well-being of water bodies and freshwater ecosystems. So moving on to community water supplies. Forest and Bed takes the same position as Mr. Del Pelsmaker. Everyone else has been saying his name all for weeks, so I'm struggling with
He's
respect
very
to
very forgiving.
With
Pelsmaker, I think.
Hey? Yeah. With respect to community water supplies. Forest and Bed's preferred position is that there is no exception for community water supplies. In broad terms, the reason for taking this position is to ensure the integrity of PC7 as a whole line plan change, and community water supplies provide for a variety of uses, not all of which may be considered second order under the MPSFM.
Can you just keep your voice up?
However, Forest and Mid would not oppose a limited exception as set out in paragraph 65 of Mr. Del Pelsmaker's evidence and reply, which would provide exceptions for Alexandra, Clyde, Cromwell, Pisa Moorings, Omakau, Luggett, Wanaka, Albert Town and Cardrona. Providing these limited exceptions will not undermine the ability of PC7 to hold the line. Carrying over the priority system for deemed permits. Forest and Bird is concerned about the potential loss of the priority system for deemed permits. The concern is that where a minimum flow is not set on a deemed permit or water permit to be replaced, the priority system would at least retain flows at the current level. This would have an ecological benefit over the situation where neither a minimum flow nor priority is set in any replacement consent. The evidence is that the removal of these priorities under PC7 could result in the loss of some in-stream values. May also mean that less water is available for those that have priority rights. It is accepted that PC7 cannot give full effect to the MPSFM. However, PC7 should not increase over allocation or other effects that inhibit the ability of the Land and Water Regional Plan to give full effect to the MPSFM. The provisions of PC7 should also ensure that the objective of PC7 effectively to hold the line are not undermined. Given the effect of failing to carry over priority rights from deemed permits to resource consents will have on ecological values and existing deemed permit holders, the priorities need to be retained. It would undermine the hold-the-line plan, change if a mechanism included in the deemed permits was not carried over. There have been some reservations about carrying over the priorities from Ms. King and Mr. Cumming. Ms. King is concerned about the complexity of seeking to retain the priority rights, and Mr. Cumming considers that the conditions as currently written would be difficult to meet and suggests alternative methods of addressing the possible impacts of removing priorities. This includes Section 17 of the RMA and the use of water shortage directions. These concerns are valid. However, Section 17 and water shortage directions are inadequate and reactive.
So just slow down and keep your voice up. Sorry. So Section 17, I get that. Yep. That's Mr. Cumming's evidence.
Yep.
Hold on a sec.
They are used to address adverse effects after they arise. It is better to address the issue at the time of granting consent to try and prevent the adverse effect from arising rather than trying to address it after it has occurred. Simply removing the priorities as being too hard is not a valid option. This would provide for increased takes, which is inconsistent with the objective of PC7, which provides for enabling activities at their existing scale and consistent with historical use, and potentially create or exacerbate over-allocation inconsistent with the MPSFM 2020. In its minute of 30 June 2021, the Court proposed some draft wording. Forest and Bird supports this draft wording as a starting point. The key point from Forest and Bird's perspective is that the drafting ensures that the matters of control and discretion ensure that the priorities are retained. just to briefly, I mean, the minute that the court put out a couple of days ago was a useful start, I think, and clearly said that there's more work to be done on this. But the key point, as far as I see, is that if we have priorities in existing permits, deemed permits, carrying those over, the key point to do is make sure that to address the complexities of it, which are plain from the evidence of Ms King, I think, to make sure the council has appropriate tools in the toolbox to make sure those complexities are addressed. So that's why I think ensuring that the different direction the court's wording was heading, which is we'll make these matters of control and discretion, and then the council can sort out at the time of granted consent how to roll those priorities over. I don't see any other way of doing it rather than leaving it. Given the Ms King's evidence, I think she it's complex. There's no two ways about trying to deal with a large number of these consents that roll over. But
yep. Yeah, I think priorities can be, and we've endeavoured to express those in plain English. What is a priority? What has it done in the past? We've translated that into RMA language. The implementation, it's complex, but at least what it means is that the council's now got a duty. It's always had a duty, but it's now confronted with the duty to keep up to date. It's water records, and it hasn't. But that is a problem not solely of its own making. It's also a problem goes the other way in terms of farmers wanting to retain control and not necessarily forthcoming in terms of what their activities are, they're carrying out those activities. So this is the time now that comes to an end.
Yeah, and so I mean, if you look, the two options are relatively stark. We either drop the priorities or we carry them over in some form. And if those matters of discretion and control are concluded in the plan, then the council will have to go through a process of sorting that out at consent time. And what that looks like, mate, will sometimes in some places it might be quite simple where the priorities are, but in some places it will be complex. But I don't think that's a reason not to do it. And so, in that sense, the concerns about complexity are valid. But eventually, when you look at what the higher order documents tell you to do, not carrying them over isn't an option.
And you understand that this isn't a foolproof guarantee that those species which are threatened will be there in 6 years' time if the court approves the plan as is, because they may not be, because it's the nature of the instrument. It's ad hoc and at the abstractors.
I think the best way of dealing with that is to try and retain the existing framework as much as can until the new plan comes in. And when those issues can be properly dealt with, there's a whole range of reasons why they are there at the moment and they might not be there in a few years. And to try and we are not in a position to be able to prejudge what those are in this PC7 context. That's the role of the land and water plan, to try and identify how that really, really important issue is dealt with. But holding the line in the sense of let's keep things as close as they are to the current point in time, because if these species have lasted for such a long length of time in those places under the current system, then that's the best way of ensuring they stay there until we can kind of do it properly.
All right. Though just bear in mind the evidence that there are other threats or other changes happening within the environment which pose a risk to those species, quite apart from taking the new single water.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a whole range of risks that are posed. That trout are a problem, and the flows. It's all interrelated. So I do understand that there's a whole lot of issues around that. But yeah,
this is one lever that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, in a big picture sense, just trying to retain the status quo is the best way of dealing with it. So trying to, particularly dropping the priorities, I think is a bad idea. And so let's try and make sure that the council has an obligation to do its best to ensure those are carried over. And that's what I think the court's wording was aimed at doing. So just need to go through the process and make sure that's the end result. 41. As notified, PC7 provided that the controlled activity rule only applied where, if water was taken for irrigation, there was no increase in the irrigated area. I've set out Mr. DePelsmaker's justification for that. I don't need to go through that. 42, Forest and Bird supports this justification. This is obvious in catchments where a reduction in allocation is needed to improve water quality. It is accepted that, in some circumstances, irrigation can increase an area while reducing nutrient losses. However, the extent of the reduction in losses needed to meet the MPSCFM is not known, and it's not appropriate to allow for an increase in irrigation. Nor would such considerations be appropriately considered under PC7's process approach and without plan provisions that give effect to the MPSCFM 2020. Things have moved on, and the matter was the subject of expert witness conferencing where the planners did not agree on the objective but were agreed on the following policy. And I've set that there with the additional there wording there. Consequential amendments were agreed to Rule 10A3.1A1 and 10A3.1.1. The plan is limited allowing additional irrigation to viticulture and orchards because the evidence of investment had only been provided with respect to viticulture and orchards. Forest and Bird agrees that these amendments are appropriate, particularly the limit to viticulture and orchards. Forest and Bird would oppose this extension to cover other land uses, particularly dairy. The reason for this position is that Forest and Bird accepts that the effects of additional irrigation for viticulture and orchards are likely to be minimal. Other land uses, particularly dairy, are known to have significant adverse effects on water quality, and approving these uses could potentially undermine the overall purpose of PC7 to hold the line while a proper planning framework is put in place. Conclusion. Forest and Bird supports PC7 as a necessary transitional step to an MPSF-compliant planning framework. It is critical that PC7 retains its integrity and provides for the rolling over of deemed permits at their existing scale and consistent with historical use. There is the possibility for limited exceptions where the environmental effects of doing so are low and it won't compromise the implementation of an integrated regional planning framework that prioritises the health and well-being of water bodies and freshwater ecosystems. The exceptions need to be expressly set out in the plan. Forest and Bird would not oppose limited exceptions for renewable energy, specified community water takes, and for extensions for irrigation for viticulture and horticulture, but not other land uses and certainly not dairy. The removal of priorities on deemed permits is not an exception that can be properly made. Their priorities serve an ecological purpose, or there are valid concerns about how the rollover of priorities can be implemented in practice. Removing them is not an option.
Oh, thank you.
Those are my submissions.
And I will give your wording. For 10A1.2, serious consideration. I think I can see the benefit of the approach that that you've taken. Yeah. So anyway, I'll give it serious consideration. I will.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Have you got any questions for Ms. Anderson?
No
questions. No questions from me. Thank you very much, Ms. Anderson.
You.
Right. Mr. Van Nulo. We're in your hands.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, Your Honour, Commissioners. As the Court will recall, Aotearoa New Zealand Fine Wine Estates, or AONS, owns and operates Manaata Estate, an existing vineyard currently in the process of expansion and development in the Lowburn catchment near Cromwell. Substantial infrastructure development occurred at Manaata in 2019, including installation of a 19 million litre water storage pond, pumping station for irrigation and frost protection, irrigation and frost-fighting water pipelines and vineyard plantings. A small further expansion of plantings is planned. And the vineyard operates under organic principles. A wine tasting room and cellar facilities are in the planning and development stage, and the Court has had the benefit of a site visit. Manaata Estate holds deemed permits for take and use of water from the Lowburn. They expire on the 1st of October 2021. An application has been lodged for replacement resource consent under Plan Change 7 as notified. Manaata Estate uses water sourced from these deemed permits for vineyard and pasture irrigation and frost fighting. Now, AONS' interest and perspective is focused on how Plan Change 7 will impact on the operation of Manaata Estate And so these submissions are similarly focused. In these submissions, unless otherwise stated, I'm assessing the drafting of Plan Change 7 as proposed in Attachments 1 and 2 to the evidence of Mr. De Pelsemaker, dated 25 June 2021. So these closing submissions address the following matters: Aon's overall position on the current proposed drafting of the plan change, an update on the resolution of outstanding matters discussed when Council appeared and presented opening submissions in Cromwell, some comments on specific provisions. I touch on the discretionary activity rule status originally proposed in Aon's submission, and very briefly on the issue of priorities in the context of how this issue may impact on Monaro Estate. In terms of overall position, the importance of viticulture in the region is well established, and I've referred there to some of the evidence in chief of MacArthur Ridge. Aon's has kept a close watching brief on the development of Plan Change 7 throughout. Its position has evolved as the plan change has evolved. In opening submissions, I confirm that Aon's is supportive of the intent and general drafting of Plan Change 7 as it was at that stage. I've set out some of those earlier submissions at paragraph 10. I don't think I need to repeat that. But I do confirm, as I go into a little bit more detail below, that Aon's remains supportive of Plan Change 7 as currently proposed. Turning now to some of the issues that were discussed in Cromwell. I did note there that the supportive position was subject to some drafting issues, particularly around the matters of control and discretion in the proposed controlled activity and restricted discretionary activity rules, and that related to use of the phrase within the limits of as opposed to in accordance with. Those issues were referred to the next scheduled expert witness conference, and the planners of that conference agreed that there were issues associated with the way those relevant controls and restricted discretionary matters were worded, and proposed revised wording to address that issue.
Are you happy with where that went?
Yes, okay. Entirely happy with that. Let's resolve that issue. Another matter that was discussed with the court when providing submissions in Cromwell was the concept of current irrigation infrastructure. And whether the record of historical rate and volume of water usage should be tied specifically to historical use using current irrigation infrastructure only. Now, again, this issue was referred back to expert witness conferencing, and the witnesses confirmed that there were a variety of reasons why the historical rate and volume of water should not be limited only to current irrigation infrastructure, and that it was appropriate that a full record of water meter data years should be utilised in calculating historical use. And again, Your Honour, just to confirm, we're happy with the way that matter was resolved and is now reflected in the revised wording. I think I'll move to paragraph 18.
All right.
So subsequent to presenting those submissions in Cromwell, we've continued to closely monitor the development of the plan change through regular reviews of further amendments arising out of the conferencing of witnesses and others proposed by the parties. Now, Aon's has also worked with the Council to test Schedule 10A4 using the deemed permits and water meter record held by Monaro Estate as a worked example. This has provided some generalised indication of how Monaro Estate would fare under Plan Change 7 in relation to the assessment of its water meter record when replacing its deemed water permits under the proposed policy and rule framework in the schedule. We've also liaised with Council for the Regional Council on some additional minor drafting consistency issues. And again, these have now been addressed in the formal Plan Change 7. And so, accordingly, Aon's confirms that it remains comfortable with the currently worded proposing, as set out in the appendices to Mr. De Pelsemaker's evidence, dated 25 July. Specifically, the controlled activity rule provides an efficient consenting pathway with reasonable certainty of outcome, which enables replacement resource consent for Monaro Estate's continued operation and the completion of the planned expansion. The possible pinch point is in relation to the access of adequate volume of water for frost fighting in the spring. But the current indications are that Monaro Estate's metered water record, either with or without other relevant methods and data, will enable access to sufficient water rate and volume. Now, of course, that's not to suggest there's any room for inefficiency or waste.
Mm-hmm.
Plan Change 7 will encourage Monarta Estate and other water users to manage water judiciously over the next 6 years. Aylns would, however, be particularly concerned if Plan Change 7 were to be further amended in a way that placed greater restrictions or limitations on access to water for holders of deemed permits, such as Monarta Estate, when seeking replacement resource consent.
You got anybody in mind? Any proposals in mind?
No, I'm just conscious that things do change. And I guess I'm just signalling that we've looked at what's in front of us now. We're comfortable
yeah.
where that is.
Okay, but, yeah, got it. All right.
Nothing particular.
Nothing in particular.
Seen
all right.
Yet. I turn now to some of the specific provisions very briefly. Objectives. AON supports the revised objectives with regard to version A or version B. As set out in Mr. DePelsmaker's evidence.
I'd say I think court found both the aspects of both those versions problematic. There are a couple of objectives, which is, I think, objective point one and point two as redrafted, which for me anyway looked good. But then what followed after that was problematic.
Right.
And it may well be that what Mr. Anderson's just suggested could actually provide a way forward, maybe?
Yes.
Part of what he's part, the second sentence, might help setting up stranded assets and other activities. That's what I thought. Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, so turning to that very briefly.
Mm-hmm. You want to look at what Mr. Anderson just said?
Well, I was going to turn first to objective A and B.
Okay, so this, I'm just going to jump into the JWS. Is that where you want
yes.
me to be? Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's see if I've got right.
So 10A 1.1 looked, for me, fine. Version B 10A 1.2 seemed to be good as well, because that both of those were actually addressing drafting issues on the objective that were before us.
Yes.
And then version A seemed to be hiving off and doing something different, and so did the 10A 1.3 seemed to be departing from the instruction and doing something different or setting up something different.
I think the point from my client's perspective is we felt that under either versions it wouldn't impact negatively on...
I don't see how it could impact on Monarta.
No. So in that sense, we were comfortable with either and don't take a position. In terms of Mr. Anderson's proposed amendments, again, I'm pretty comfortable with the way that was heading. Again, it seems consistent with what we understood the intention was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So turning to policies, amendments to policies as set out in Plan Change 7 is currently proposed are also considered appropriate. The reference to historical rather than actual rate and volume of take is specifically supported. Aylns is supportive of policy 10A 2.1 providing for the additional irrigation area for viticulture and orchards where mainline irrigation pipes were installed prior to 18 March 2020. However, in the case of Monarta Estate, planned additional plantings will not give rise to an increase in the area under irrigation, so this amendment is not being relied on. You may recall there was a large area on the property that was previously irrigated as pasture in any event. So,
it's irrigated land now is going to be converted into an orchard.
Viticulture, yes.
Yeah, viticulture.
But it won't increase the overall area on the property under
irrigation. It won't increase the historical use of water, presumably.
It should not.
It should not.
The issue is around frost fighting.
Yeah.
And so whilst the overall volumes won't change, there is there's a refocus in terms of volumes to spring, whereas under previous regimes, more water would have been used in later summer, which now won't be needed.
Yeah, frostbiting presents its own issues, doesn't it? Because you need a great big dollop of water to fill up ponds at the beginning of a season.
Keep the ponds topped up.
Yeah.
Fortunately, from an environmental perspective, that water is the greatest demand is is at a time when there seems to be the most water around.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, it's actually a positive.
But you're comfortable that the schedule now accommodates the filling of ponds for those purposes?
Yes, we've looked at the numbers. Mm. It seems to work.
Mm.
Now, my only hesitation when I say seem is because we don't know exactly what the weather patterns are going to provide.
Yeah.
And the risk is if you get an unseasonably bad run of frost, that is where an issue might arise.
Mm.
But as I say, the numbers, you know, as far as we're able to, tend to support what we anticipate will happen.
But if you have a run of frost, you may not have capacity anyway in the pond to continuously frostbite.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's some assumptions around the number of consecutive days for frostbiting, isn't there?
Yes, yeah. That is true. I mean, I think the key thing from my client's perspective in terms of access to the water is from the race is being able to draw down in accordance with the rate of take that's historically been provided for, enable those ponds to be topped up.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good.
I think that takes us to the controlled activity rule, paragraph 27. The revised wording set out in the appendices to Mr. De Pelsemaker's evidence and reply is considered appropriate and supported. As we've just been discussing, it's anticipated Monadnock Estates application replacement resource consent will process through the controlled activity pathway. Support the restricted discretionary activity rule wording. We don't anticipate having to rely on that in terms of the specific stranded asset pipeline rule. Importantly, though, the rule does provide some discretion to council to consider other relevant methods and data when assessing historical use. This does appropriately provide a degree of flexibility not otherwise available to applicants using the controlled activity pathway. Discretionary activity status. In its original submission, Aon sought a discretionary activity pathway for resource consents over 6 years. In light of the way Plan Change 7 has developed through the hearing process, with a clearer focus on process, plan change, and the rollover of existing rights under deemed permits on an interim basis, Aon is no longer specifically seeking that relief. And I do note in this respect the evidence and reply of Mr. De Pelsemaker on this issue, paragraph 18, where he raises a number of concerns about that proposed rule status. Turning now to priorities, the deemed permits held by Monadnock Estate are subject to priorities. This was discussed by Mr. Paulin in his evidence to the court. Monadnock Estate's rights to take water have priority over other deemed permits, and at least one other deemed permit has a priority over Monadnock's take. Aon's decision not to engage directly on priority issues and its position on priorities is shaped by the factual situation as it relates to the estate. Monadnock Estate's water take from the low burn is from a point located higher in the catchment relative to the majority of deemed permit holders over which it has priority. In a practical sense, the lie of the land is largely consistent with and facilitates the exercise of the legal priorities which Monadnock Estate holds. In addition, as the court is aware and we've just been discussing, Monada has invested in substantial water storage infrastructure in recent years, and that storage capacity provides a buffer against both dry periods and potentially, if it were to arise, competing demands for water by other users. This storage buffer is considered likely to be adequate if needed for most of the year, with the possible exception of spring frostfriding, when Monada's demand for water to keep its storage pond topped up will be greatest. During spring, however, natural flow levels in the low burn are generally higher and other non-viticulture user demands are likely to be less. So for these reasons, Monadnock Estate on a practical level may be more insulated than some other deemed permit holders from some of the priorities issues and their implications that have arisen in Plan Change 7. Aon's is supportive of the approach where priorities are reflected in replacement consents as conditions. It appreciates that there are a number of practical and legal complexities. I have seen the drafting attached to the court's minute and also a revision of that, which I saw online this morning, which I think Mr. Page has prepared. Aon's will be comfortable with that sort of recognition of priorities and certainly would agree that they must be retained as accurately as possible to reflect historical usage.
But quite aside from its future-proofing, if you could put it that way, through storage, Manaata is located higher up in the catchment, so presumably there is few, if any, abstractors above it.
There's two abstractors above it, is my understanding. One is of a lesser priority, and one is of a higher priority. But there's a bit of uncertainty as to whether that higher priority take is actually being utilised or being utilised at a rate. So,
in theory, Manaata could tell the lesser to turn off?
I believe that's right.
Yeah.
But the reality is...
they probably don't because of the storage. And so when you come to engage with this, just say, you come to engage with this and something comes down on the plan. Loban was unusual in as much as lots of priorities, but nobody seemed to be exercising them for a variety of reasons, not least that there was always something left in the river to take, which doesn't sound good in terms of environmental outcomes. Mm. But anyway, that's the reality in Loburn. But I guess from your point of view, you would need to engage with it, whether you chose to exercise it or not. Is a matter for you. You'd still have to go through the process.
Absolutely. I wasn't when I said hasn't engaged. What I was really alluding to. Haven't attended in terms of cross examination.
No. And that's absolutely fine. So, but anyway, what you've seen thus far to date is something that your client, when it comes to making an application or amending an application, could implement.
Yes.
That's the key thing.
Yes, yep. And we've certainly been watching the drafting as it's developed, and are very comfortable with the way what's been proposed, and really do support the fact that whatever comes out of this should continue to reflect the priority regime as best as it's able to.
Yeah.
But I think, as Your Honour alluded to, the practical situation, as it was described to me, is there's always been water in the river. The relative size of Manaata's take as opposed to what is in that creek means that, in practical terms, this hasn't been an issue.
Yeah.
I think Your Honour's right. In theory and as a matter of law, Manaata could, if it was running dry, tell the take above it to cease, desist. If that upstream take, if its replacement consent reflects its historical usage, which it would under Plan Change 7, it's not going to be an issue because it hasn't been in the past. So I think the status quo will continue for at least 6 years.
Okay, no, I understand that. Thank you.
So in conclusion, Aeons has closely followed the development of Plan Change 7 because access to reliable, adequate supplies of water for irrigation and frost fighting purposes is critical to the ongoing operation and development of the estate. Aeon supports the available of an efficient, cost-effective process for the issue of replacement resource consents for deemed permit holders. Proposed controlled activity and restricted discretionary activity pathways are supported, notwithstanding that they provide an interim six-year consent process only until a replacement land and water plan is operative. Thank the court for the opportunity to present these closings.
Oh, no, good. So it sounds like today all of Manaata's concerns have been resolved.
Yes.
Yeah, capable of being resolved.
Where the process is here.
All right, thank you. You got any questions?
Thank you, Commissioner.
No? All good. Thank you very much for your submission. All right. Mr. Reed. Mr. Reed's coming in by ABL. Good morning, Mr.
Morning,
Reed.
Yes, good morning, Your Honour.
Yes, good morning. Can you see us?
Yes, I can see you.
Good. There you go. Right. We're in your hands, Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Your Honour. I've prepared some closing submissions. Mm-hmm. And do you have those in front of you?
We do. Thank you. Yep.
So, may it please the Court... these closing submissions are made on behalf of Strathclyde Water Limited, MacArthur Ridge Vineyard Limited and Mount Dunstan Estates Limited. The relief sought by MacArthur Ridge parties has focused on changes to Schedule 10A4 in regards to the calculation of the historical rate of take in daily, monthly and annual volumes, and the irrigation area limitation in Policy 10A21 and Rule 10A31, which is the stranded assets issues. These matters have been discussed and tested throughout the hearing, and I do not intend to cover all of this ground again today. In regards to Schedule 10A4, the MacArthur Ridge parties support the amendments to proposed in Appendix 2 to Mr. DePalsmaker's evidence in reply of 25 June 2021, agreed following the expert witness conferencing. So those issues, just to interpolate, Your Honour, are resolved so far as the MacArthur Ridge parties are concerned.
Yep.
In regards to the area limitation, Mr. DePalsmaker has proposed extending the period for determining the maximum area irrigated from 18 March 2020. And this would partially address the concerns of the MacArthur Ridge parties by allowing for areas that were newly irrigated between 2018 and 18 March 2020. And so there were some areas in that category, Your Honour. So some that had been newly developed but would not have been caught by that earlier date. However, the problem of stranded assets would not be resolved through that amendment alone. The expert witnesses propose making provision for the issue via an amendment to the restriction discretionary activity pathway. And just to be clear about that and to interpolate again, Your Honour, that would mostly address the issue that MacArthur Ridge has raised. However, in my submission, the stranded asset question would be better dealt with by an amendment to the controlled activity rule, and that is this issue that I focus on in these submissions.
So is the outstanding issue for MacArthur Ridge, what is the appropriate activity status for the rule?
Yes, it is, Your Honour.
Okay.
And so I'm addressing the question in these submissions, but it's really just to have it absolutely right. MacArthur Ridge is largely content with what's proposed.
Yeah.
So turning to the stranded assets question, and what I've just tried to do in the submissions for the court's assistant is just outline the evidence, where I understand the evidence has gone up to on these questions. So, paragraph 7, Dr. Davern's evidence on stranded infrastructure was that the issue is more likely to arise in the horticultural industry, including viticulture, because of the way horticultural developments are often carried out. Typically, the total area planned for development is identified at the start of a project. The irrigation demand for the total area is calculated, and the irrigation infrastructure is designed and sized with the total demand in mind. The mainline irrigation infrastructure for the whole area is constructed to these specifications at the start of the development. Once the irrigation infrastructure is in place, planting is typically carried out in a staged way, with matters such as availability of rootstock, commodity prices and other market conditions dictating the speed of development. In the case of viticulture, a grapevine then has a 5-year horizon before it gets to full production. What this means is that for horticulture and viticulture development, significant capital investment in infrastructure is required at the start of the development, but it can then be some time before is actually turned on across the whole property. The MacArthur Ridge development is an example of this process. The total development plan was 237 hectares, and the irrigation infrastructure was designed with a capacity to service this entire area. Dr. Jordan confirmed that this, I've just set out a quote from Dr. Jordan.
It's okay.
So 12, The mainline irrigation infrastructure necessary for the entire development was installed between 2002 and 2004, and planting has occurred on a stage, in a staged way since then. Paragraph 13, PC7, as notified, does not respond to the issue of infrastructure that has been constructed but not yet used for irrigation. The expert planners involved in the expert conferencing on this topic agree that PC7 should respond to this issue. So what is the appropriate response? The MacArthur Ridge Party has proposed an amendment to policy 10A2 and rule 10A31 of PC7 to respond to the issue of stranded assets. This proposal was considered in the expert witness conferencing on in May and then again in June. The outcome of this conferencing was a proposal to amend the policy and the rule to provide for stranded assets by way of an RDA pathway. This pathway is only available for orchard and viticultural land uses. The MacArthur Ridge Party has accepted this proposal could potentially deal with the problem, but submit that the provision will be better made for stranded assets within the controlled activity pathway. This is because the RDA pathway provides less certainty for applicants and creates potential complications where, as with MacArthur, the development is part of is a small part of a wider scheme. And at paragraph 18, I've highlighted some of the evidence from Ms. Dicey as to what that issue is.
Just pause there a second because I'm not quite sure whether I'm with you on that. Hold on, paragraph 18. Don't quite get it, but just I'll read what Ms. Dicey says and then I'll come back with the question. Yeah, and MacArthur is a shareholder of the Manahita Care scheme?
Yes, it is, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, you carry on. So
MacArthur is a small shareholder in a much, much bigger scheme with wide interests, and it may be that schemes may be reluctant to go down a restricted discretionary pathway to just address this one issue when they would otherwise be controlled.
And could the scheme quite conceivably just simply not make provision for for the additional land, the water required for the additional land? Yep.
Yes, and they may be reluctant to do so because it may mean that they have to go down a restricted discretionary. It would mean they have to go down a restricted discretionary pathway and run the risk that, however small, but there is no doubt a risk that the consent is declined.
So that the scheme could go down the controlled activity pathway and not make provision for your client's total land area, which it would irrigate. Could be that the scheme is also anyway going down an RDA pathway because of complications in terms of gaps in data records and so forth. And if it's going down the pathway anyway, then presumably it would be no problem to pick up this issue MacArthur.
Quite right. There'd be no issue in that circumstance.
Yeah, okay.
But that just can't be guaranteed that that's what we're
doing. No, I understand what the issue is. I understand what the issue is. Thank you.
That complication is then balanced in my submission against the matters that the expert planners rely on at paragraph 19. Mm. So they recommend the RDA pathway because of uncertainty concerning how many land holdings the stranded asset issue would apply to and the potential for water quality effects from the expansion of irrigated areas. Mm. So, and just so that to be clear about what the expert witnesses are saying, just summarise that at paragraph 20, and this is a reference to paragraph 26 of the joint witness statement. So the joint witness statement records that the planners agree a controlled activity pathway could be used if there was sufficient information that the combined effects are low with respect to the number of applicants who might seek the pathway, or that the area of land potentially affected, but given the lack of information about the risk, a more precautionary approach may be advisable. Mm-hmm. So, in my submission, Your Honour, it's a relatively low conviction recommendation on the part of the experts. That they're sort of equivocal about whether it's really necessary. So I then go on to discuss the evidence that's in front of the court and to summarise that on water quality effects, because that seems to be the main concern. So paragraph 21, the concerns about the potential water quality effects associated with providing for stranded assets arose in the context of irrigation for pastoral land use. However, the expert planners have recommended the stranded asset pathway apply to orchards and vineyard land uses only, thereby avoiding the potential issue with water quality effects associated with increased pastoral land use. The evidence before the court is that orchard and viticulture land uses do not have significant water quality effects, and that the potential effects are significantly less than the potential effects of pastoral land uses. There are a number of reasons for this. Orchards and viticultural land use do not involve the grazing of animals associated with diffuse discharges. According to Ms. Sands, the nutrient leaching rates of low-impact horticulture, such as fruit crops, are generally similar to or less than unirrigated sheep and beef farming, with less water quality impacts with regard to E. coli and sediment. Low-impact horticultural crops use much less water than irrigated pasture. Again, relying on Ms. Sands from Horticulture New Zealand, she referred to the water use for low-impact horticulture as being on average one-third of that for irrigated pasture. The evidence specifically in regard to viticulture is that the nutrient requirements for vines are very low compared to other uses. Viticulture does not require an annual application of fertiliser. The need to apply fertiliser is assessed using three key factors: soil nutrient level, vine health, and visual observation. If the vines are healthy and producing well, the soil levels are normal and no fertiliser is applied. If nitrogen is applied, it would be in the order of 25 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year, which is low compared to other types of agricultural activities. Studies, particularly in the Mulga area, have identified that nitrogen leaching from vineyard activities are very low. It is uncommon to apply phosphorus to vineyards, particularly in central Otago. If phosphorus is applied, it is typically an adjustment prior to planting with infrequent application thereafter. Because of the slow application rate, because the application is targeted at the vines themselves, the risk of runoff is low. In viticulture, it is critical that the correct amount of irrigation water is applied. Overwatering can have significant adverse effects on vine health and production. Soil and vine monitoring are used to determine water requirements, and irrigation is managed to match the daily water needs. Water is applied with a targeted and precision-based system. It is not a broadcast application. The risk of water quality effects is further mitigated by PC7's limit on the allocation of water to historic land use. For orchards and vineyards, having an adequate supply of water available is crucial. So the volume of water allocated to the property will be a limiting factor, limiting the extent of additional development and associated water quality effects. Further, including the use of good management practice as a matter of control ensures that council can impose conditions to further mitigate the potential water quality effects. turning to the potential scope and application of the rules, Justin Pulsemaker says that there has been no evidence provided to the court about the number of orchards or viticulture operations that are at risk of having stranded assets. This concern was also expressed by the JWS, where the planners referred to there being no information about how many land holdings the stranded asset pathway would apply to. In my submission, the concerns in relation to this issue are overstated for several reasons. First, the pathway only applies to a very specific factual situation, only if all mainline irrigation pipes to service the additional area were actually installed prior to 18 March 2020, and the additional area had not been irrigated prior to that date. Second, even for properties that do fall within the stranded asset criteria, the extent of additional development the extent of any additional development that can be done will be constrained by the design capacity of the system that is in place and the available supply of water. Unfettered expansion would not be possible. Economic and practical considerations will also restrain the extent of development over the six-year consent period. The timescale for development of orchards and viticulture properties is much slower than for agricultural land uses. Time will be needed to obtain rootstock for areas that were unplanted and unirrigated before March 2020, so rapid development is unlikely. Additional costs will also be incurred in the expansion. The uncertain supply of water at the end of the six-year consent period is likely to further inhibit enthusiasm for widespread development, even if irrigation infrastructure is all in place. So is there a need to decline applications, potentially decline applications? A further reason identified by Mr. Pulsemaker in favour of the RDA activity status is that under controlled activity status, the council would lose its discretion to decline a consent. However, having accepted that stranded assets should be provided for in the plan change, it is unclear why a discretion to decline consents falling within the limited stranded asset criteria is necessary. The matters of discretion that have been identified are not matters for which consent application would be declined. During the cross-examination on the 29th of June, the expert planners could not identify any scenario in which an application, having met the strict stranded asset criteria, would need to be declined. Conclusion. Many of the concerns raised by MacArthur River parties in relation to PC7 as notified will be addressed by the amendments now proposed and the evidence replied by Mr. Pulsemaker. The exception is that a proposal for responding to the issue of stranded assets, PC7 is notified, creates the potential for infrastructure that is in the ground to be unable to be used. This would lead to some costs and inefficient use of resources. The expert planning witnesses all agree that the problem with PC, that this is a problem with PC7 that needs to be addressed. However, they have taken a precautionary approach by recommending that the issue be dealt with via a new limb of the restricted discretionary pathway. The difficulty with this recommendation is that it provides less certainty for applicants and will potentially be ineffective in addressing the issue, particularly in a scheme situation. In my submission, including the stranded asset pathway within the controlled activity rules would avoid the potential complications of the RDA pathway and provides a better outcome. In my submission, there is no real reason in front of them to change that to RDA pathway approach on this issue when the stranded asset exception is so limited in scope. The risk of extensive irrigation development occurring within the scope of the rule is low. The potential water quality effects of allowing additional irrigation expansion in vineyards and agriculture are minimal and can be addressed adequately and can be adequately dealt with by the council, by the control activity.
Right, thank you. Questions?
No questions.
Questions? No, questions from me? Understood those submissions. And again, we'll give very careful consideration to the appropriate activity status. But otherwise, I think where everybody has got to is now resolved your client's concerns, save in relation to that one issue.
It has, Your Honour. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Reeve.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Welsh, I'll have you home before lunchtime.
I'm booked on 7 p.m. Oh. yes. Ma'am, I've just got a... I hadn't left with the registry my submission, so I just need to pass those up.
Do you want to take morning tea? I mean, well, we usually break for a longer break, so that. But I think we're just racing through. Do you want to take a 15-minute break? We're happy to take a 15-minute break, and then you can...
I can hand out my submissions.
Yeah,
thank you, ma'am.
That'll be good. All right. Thank you. All rise.